So welcome everyone, and thank you for coming today. I know that many of our regular attendees are away for the holidays or a family in, so wish them a Merry Christmas too. Thank you for coming. For those of you who are looking around a little bit, you might have noticed some changes going on outside. We are finally into the beginning phases of our landscaping. And what you see as you look around is all the sidewalks have been taken up, and we've had major drainage issues here. And so there's a lot of been moving of the earth and creating rain gardens to harvest the water. And over these next months, the beautification will begin. We'll probably be having professionals bringing in the larger trees and bamboos. But then there'll be a lot of nice gardening work for us to do when the smaller plants, flowers, are to be planted and cared for. But our hope is over these next years to really create a beautiful oasis here on Nebraska Avenue. A place that'll, you know, just people who just will come will feel a sense of beauty and harmony. Peace, and just to feel a connection with nature, which is often hard to get in urban areas. As well, we are nearing the completion of our meditation hall. Probably the last thing we'll be doing is up front here. This floating wall behind me will be painted, and we're actually going to build a more contemporary altar out of the pew wood that used to be here in the sanctuary, and we've actually purchased a new Buddha, an old Buddha, but a new Buddha that's a sitting Buddha much larger than this, which I think would be quite beautiful for the hall. So that'll all be unfolding in the coming months. So today, because it is the holiday season, I did this last year, and I was asked to do it again, so I'm very happy to do that, is to kind of share the Dharma of Charles Dickens in relationship to the Christmas Carol, which I think is a quite wonderful, profound story. Because, and especially relevant to those of us on a quote-unquote spiritual path, because the story of the Christmas Carol and the story of Scrooge is not overtly a story of anybody following a spiritual path at all. It is not the story of someone following a meditative path, path of wisdom and compassion at all. It's a very human story. And so therefore, I think it's possible for us all to relate to. But also, I think it's a wonderful reminder, especially to those of us who somewhat immerse ourselves in spirituality, in study and practice of the deeper truths and wisdoms of our human kind for thousands of years that is shared with us now, as well as those of us who deeply introspect into our own minds and situations and look deeply into things, that at the end of all that, it is really about human kindness. It's all about what kind of a human being we are and how we relate to each other. So I think this is a wonderful story because it is so human. So I want to share that with you today, and then we can maybe just see how the time goes. We can talk about it afterwards. I'm not going to read it all, nor I'm going to share it all, but I'd like to move through it with you. Everybody knows it, right? Good. So The protagonist is Ebenezer Scrooge. And even though he's presented in a quite extreme way, he is known to us. He is also known within us. We all have seeds of Scrooge in us. So it's good, even though he's somewhat of a caricature as he's presented, it's so we can recognize it more easily. So Scrooge is a man of business. He's a man of finance. He's a man totally lost in the world of himself. Scrooge, a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner, hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret, self-contained, solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek. He carried his low temperature always about him. External heat and cold had little influence on Scrooge. No warmth could warm, no wintry weather could chill. No wind that blew was bitterer than he. No falling snow was more intent upon its purpose. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say with gladsome looks, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come see me?" No beggars even implored him to give them a trifle. No children asked him what time it was. No man or woman ever once in all his life had inquired the way to such and such a place. Even blind men's dogs appeared to know him. And when they saw him coming, they would tug their owners into doorways and up courts, and then would wag their tails as if to say, "No eye at all is better than an evil eye, dark master." So that's Scrooge. And then in his counting house, there is his clerk, Bob Cratchit. And Bob is a, what can we say about Bob Cratchit? Bob's a sweet man, isn't he? He's a good man. He's a happy man in his own way, and yet he is downtrodden. Downtrodden by being under the thumb of Scrooge. He's downtrodden by his poverty. I mean, Scrooge just pays him enough to keep his family alive. He's downtrodden just by the illnesses of his young son. But he's a good man, right? He's a good man. He has not, even though life, we could say, has given him a hard life and a hard master, in Scrooge, he still retains a good heart, and he still ice skates, and he still knows how to have fun. And so I see it as sort of he's in the middle. There's Scrooge, there's Bob Cratchit, and then early on in the book we meet his nephew. And his nephew is kind of exuberant, good-hearted, hail fellow, well met, very, well, let me describe him. So he comes to wish his uncle, who he's pretty much alienated from, he comes to wish him Merry Christmas, and we hear the famous Bah Humbug in response to him. And his nephew asks him not to be cross. And Scrooge, now, this is kind of his first words. He says, "What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools?" Really, as much as his nephew. "Merry Christmas. Out with Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money, a time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer, a time for balancing your books and having every item in them through a round of dozens of months presented dead against you. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart." Need I say more? Scrooge is not unknown to the world. He measures everything in what? In money. Money is the purpose of life. The accumulation of money and things is the purpose of life. And sort of everything else is foolishness, purposelessness, lesson. That is Scrooge. And then his nephew, receiving this diatribe against, dares to say to his uncle, "There are many things from which I might have derived good, but which I have not profited. Christmas among them. But I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time when it came round as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time, the only time I've known of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys." Very wonderful, right? And I think Dickens is revealing his truth about what life should be and how we should look at each other, using Scrooge's nephew to be the mouth of that, the voice of that. And I think he's really pushing us in the direction of, even though it is this once a year, to really be this all year round. And then we meet to get another sense of Scrooge and the Scroogeness in us. The shop is then entered by these well-meaning folks who are looking for a charitable donation to a good charity. And since Scrooge is obviously a man of business and wealth, they're expecting some contribution. And so they say to him, "At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessities. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts." Scrooge says in response, and we know we have many people in our country who might answer the same, "Are there no prisons?" "Yes." "Plenty of prisons," the gentlemen say. "And the workhouses, are they not still in operation?" "Yeah, they are." "And the poor law, are they not in full vigor?" "Oh," says Scrooge, "and I was concerned that they weren't. I'm very glad to hear that." And then the gentlemen say, "But these scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind and body to the multitude. So therefore a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and some drink, some means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?" You know, he's taking a little subscription. And Scrooge says, quite proudly, "Nothing." "You wish to be anonymous, sir?" And Scrooge says in his famous line, "I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me, gentlemen, my wish, this is my answer. I don't make myself merry at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I've mentioned, you know, the poorhouse, etc. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there." And then these gentlemen, still not really realizing who they're dealing with, still trying to be rational, say, "Many can't go there, and many would rather die than go there. "If they would rather die," said Scrooge, "they had better do it and decrease the surplus population." And then when they ask him a little more, trying to help them understand the condition of poor people, he says, "They are not my business. It is enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen." So that is Scrooge, and that is his nephew, and that is where we begin. And so Scrooge is Christmas Eve, and Scrooge, after closing up the shop, after some a few unkind words to Bob Cratchit, because Bob is, taking off the next day for Christmas, and if you could believe it or not, is getting paid for it. And the idea of that is totally abominable to, he kind of lets him have it and says, "I expect you in even earlier the following day." So Scrooge goes home to his dreadful quarters, alone. And really, the Christmas Carol is a ghost story, really. Because it's really about Scrooge's encounter with ghosts. And he, so he goes to sleep, and he is awoken by, he hasn't gone to sleep yet, but he is sitting up in his quarters, and a ghost, a horrible, frightful ghost appears. It is the ghost of Marley. Marley was his partner, dead 7 years. Marley was his confederate. Marley and him shared the same orientation, the same outlook, and the same belief that wealth and the accumulation of wealth and the holding on to the wealth would be not only the only purpose for their life, but the only way to measure whether one is successful or a failure in life. And so all of a sudden, the ghost of Marley appears. And Scrooge says, "Dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?" And the ghost replies to him, "Man of worldly mind." It's interesting. "Man of worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?" "I do. I must. But why do spirits walk on the earth, and why do they come to me?" And the ghost says, "It is," and this is quite wonderful, "it is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men." These are the days when they used things like "man" to describe all of us. So please hear "men" and "women" together. "Required of every one of us that we should all walk upon our fellow human beings, travel far and wide, that is why I think it's, I am so happy in a way that we have, our center is here on Nebraska Avenue and not in more desirable parts of town. Because I think it is important that we walk among our fellow men. And certainly being on Nebraska Avenue, we see the full spectrum of life, which is good for us. So he says, if we do not walk abroad among our fellow men, it is condemned that we do so after death. So this is why this ghost is a ghost wandering, because in his life he did not open to his fellow men. "That spirit is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me. It is my fate to witness what it did not share, but could have shared on earth. and turn to happiness. And it cries out, and it shakes its chains. You are fettered, Scrooge said. Why? Remember, he's chains, and a lot of those chains are like things like cash registers and ledger books, all the things of business. He says, Scrooge says, you're fettered. Tell me why. And again, I think this is a key phrase here. I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link, yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? He says to Scrooge. So this is, very powerful, right? And it's, for those of you not familiar with Buddhism, the whole idea of cause and effect, karma, that we are creating with the actions of our body, speech, and mind, we are creating our life. We are creating our mind state. We are creating our relationships. And it's very powerful. You know, it's like, where did you get this chain that enslaves you, that wears you down? It is the chain Marley has now understood. I am the one who forged this chain, no one else. I forged it link by link. I girded it of my own free will. He says that now, right? He might not have said it 8 years ago. But now he understands that he had free will, that he could have chosen differently all throughout his life, but he didn't. Scrooge trembles. And the ghost says, or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It is full, it was full as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eve ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain. So he's saying, are you aware that you are wearing a chain too? And when I last saw you 7 years ago, it was as big as mine, and it's probably grown even larger. And then they talk a little more, and then this is another great line. So Scrooge says to him, because Marley tells him about this incredible suffering he's been going through these years, but he says, Jacob, you were always a good man of business. Right? Jacob, you were always a good man of business. Business, cried Marley. Mankind is a great line. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, these were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Does anything need to be said? Right. What is our business as human beings? What is our true business here in this short stay we have in life? Mankind is our business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence. And our business, which is often our work, which is not that it's not our work, but which consumes us. The stuff that we are working for consumes us. And we forget what our true purpose of life really is. But then it's just an interesting thing, as after Marley lets him know about he will be visited by the three visitations, Scrooge looks out the window, and he sees the air. He looks out the window of his apartment. He sees the air is filled with phantoms, wandering hither and thither in restless haste, moaning as they go. Every one of them wore chains like Marley's ghost. some few, and then he puts in parentheses, they might be guilty governments, were linked together. None were free. Many had been personally known to Scrooge in their lives. He had been quite familiar with one old ghost in a white waistcoat with a monstrous iron safe attached to its ankle, who cried piteously at being unable to assist a wretched woman with an infant whom it saw below upon a doorstep. Their misery was with them all. And even though they sought now to interfere for the good in human matters, they had lost that power forever. So it's very interesting. He looks out, he sees, I mean, he had seen Marley, but he looks out and he sees there are ghosts everywhere, all of them in chains. And yet now, having been through what they've been through and now understood things differently, they want to reach out and help people, but they can't anymore. They're just phantoms. So moving along, Scrooge goes to bed, and then, as you know, he's awakened by the first spirit, the spirit of Christmas past. This is fascinating. We don't need to go into the whole thing, but it's beside the whole way the spirit of Christmas past is dressed and everything. The strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light by which everything was visible, and which was doubtless the occasion of it using, in its duller moments, a great extinguisher for a cap, which it now held under its arm. I don't think this was in the movies. But the spirit of Christmas past has this bright light that clarifies everything, that shines out of the top of its head, but it also carries a cap to cover it. This was the strangest thing about him. And then later on it says, perhaps Scrooge could have not told anybody why, if anybody could have asked him, he had a special desire to see the spirit in his cap and begged him to cover him, to cover it. Right. Scrooge didn't like the light. He didn't like the light. He didn't like everything lit up. He wanted the spirit to put the cap back on. I mean, what, exclaimed the ghost, would you so soon put out with worldly hands the light I give? Is it not enough that you are one of those whose passions made this cap and forced me through whole trains of years to wear it low, to wear it low upon my brow? Fascinating, right? We all have this light that can see clearly, and we'll soon travel with the ghost to see what. And he said, but the ghost says, don't you understand? You and people like you have made this bonnet that I have to wear upon my head so things are not lit up. Scrooge reverently disclaimed all intention to offend or any knowledge of having willfully bonneted the spirit for any period of his life. Then he made bold to inquire what business brought him here, and the ghost says, your welfare, your reclamation. Take heed, rise, and walk with me. And then, as you know, and I'll just kind of summarize, he takes his first journey for Scrooge is to journey into his past. And I think this is very instructive, that he journeys into his past, but he journeys into it not the way often many of us journey into it. Many of us, our journey into the past often leads us down unhappy paths. Our journey into the past often brings us in the world of disappointment, resentment, anger, missed opportunity, sad. I mean, our journey into the past is not often liberating. So I think it's important that we see that this journey, which the Spirit said is for his deliverance, is in the past. And what we see is this unfolding, where Scrooge, he takes him back far enough that he sees himself when he was happy, when he was young. He touches that innocence, that purity that all children have. And that's where he begins with Scrooge. But then he also takes him and he sees the journey of this little boy with his family, his father, shut away at boarding school, right? In relationships, at work, in his early days of work. He sees himself shut down. He sees himself lose his capacity for happiness and joy, and that even when he is surrounded by others, his first employee, Fezziwig, is a wonderful man, his wife, and very joyous, and treats his Ebenezer wonderfully. And Scrooge can see how touched he was by that, but yet he turned. He brings him back to meet his fiancée, who basically breaks up with him because she sees that the Ebenezer that she fell in love with and that she planned her life with had replaced her with a new idol, she said. The idol of business, the idol of gold and silver. And so it is a very, it is very touching, this chapter. Because again, his journey into his past is not either anger at himself or resentment of those around him or any kind of resentment of the hard times he went through. It was really a touching deeply that childlike part of himself. And also seeing that there was goodness around him. There were people who cared for him. There were people who loved him. There were people who were trying to offer him another way, and yet he himself chose the path that he went on in life. It's interesting when he's observing Fezziwig and all Christmas and how happy everybody was and happy he was in the family of Fezziwig and how well he treated his staff. And Scrooge comments to the, you know, how wonderful it is to see this. And the ghost says to him, "Oh, it's a small matter, making all these silly folks so full of gratitude." "Small," Scrooge says. Because the spirit, they were listening to the two apprentices, one of which was Ebenezer, pouring out their hearts in praise of Fezziwig. And the spirit says, he's only spent a few pounds on this party, you know, of your mortal money, three or four. You know, that's like nothing. Why should you be praising him?" He's saying this to Scrooge. You see, he's kind of playing the devil's advocate here. And Scrooge himself says, and speaking unconsciously like his former, not his latter self, "It isn't that, spirit." And he's talking about Fezziwig. "He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and look, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune." Is that clear?
Yeah.
Again, you know, Scrooge returning to his older self, he realized, you know, our capacity to be happy and our capacity to give happiness to other people is not about money. right? It's about how we treat each other, how we are with each other, how we love and enjoy and take care of. I mean, it's just so beautiful. At the end, Scrooge, he takes him on a few more journeys, including his fiancée, who's now very happily married and lots of children and all that. And Scrooge says, "Please, Spirit," he said, his voice breaking, "remove me from these places." The ghost says, "I told you these were the shadows of the things that have been, that they are what they are. Do not blame me." "Remove me," Scrooge exclaimed. "I cannot bear it." He turned upon the ghost, and seeing that it looked upon him with a face in which, in some strange way, there were fragments of all the faces it had shown him, he said, "Leave me. Take me back home. Haunt me no longer." In the struggle, if that can be called a struggle, in which the ghost, with no visible resistance on its own part, was undisturbed by any efforts of its adversary, Scrooge observed that its light was burning high and bright. And dimly connecting that that was having an influence over him, he seized the extinguisher cap, remember that bonnet, and by a sudden action pressed it down upon its head. The spirit dropped beneath it, so that the extinguisher covered its whole form. But though Scrooge pressed it down with all his force, he could not hide the light, which streamed from under it in an unbroken flood upon the ground. Very powerful. Very powerful. Taking that deep look into the past and touching that purity of heart, that purity of vision, that openness of which we are all given in childhood, which is our heritage, and seeing how everything unfolded, even though Scrooge was touched by that, upon his return it was like, you know, I don't want to even know that, right? Because to know it has consequences. So he struggled, right? He took the bonnet and he put it on. We don't want to see clearly. But he couldn't. It was too late, right? Even though the bonnet was put back on top, the light was streaming out. And then he falls back to sleep. And then he is visited by the next spirit. And you know the next spirit, who that is? That is the spirit of Christmas present. And basically, I mean, again, what this is, again, we're now in the present, and the spirit of Christmas present takes him on a journey, right, into all kinds of homes, including his, including Bob Cratchit's home, the Cratchit's home, including his nephew's home, but in lots of other homes, and he takes him far and wide. He takes him, he takes him to the home of coal miners, and he takes him out into the sea on lighthouses where people are alone and a couple of people together. And basically, he shows him the possibility of goodness, right? That people are enjoying themselves, that people have the capacity to be happy and to enjoy each other and to just enjoy life, enjoy the gift of life in all these situations. And even in homes where there is hardship or deprivation, that is overcome by human warmth and love and caring. So this is the journey of the present. Much they saw and far they went, and many homes they visited, but always with a happy end. The Spirit stood beside sick beds, and they were cheerful. On foreign lands, and they were close at home. By struggling men and women, and they were patient. By poverty, and everything was rich. In almshouses, hospitals, jails, in misery's every refuge, where vain man in his little brief authority had not made fast the door and barred the Spirit out, the Spirit of Christmas left his blessing and taught Scrooge his precepts. Right? And then just before he takes leave, Scrooge notices that beneath his skirts, you know, he has a big robe, there are these little forms. And he's seen like a little claw or foot or something. He doesn't know what they are. So Scrooge says, you know, what is it that is hiding under your robe? From the foldings of its robe, he brought out two children. Wretched, frightful, hideous, miserable. They knelt down at its feet and clung upon the outside of its garment. "O man," he says to Scrooge, "look here. Look, look down here." They were a boy and a girl, yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish, but prostrate too in their humility. Where graceful youth should have filled their features out and touch them with its freshest tints, a stale and shriveled hand, like that of the aged, pinched, twisted. Where angels might have sat enthroned, devils lurked and glared out menacing. No change, no degradation, no perversion of humanity in any grade through all the mysteries of wonderful creation as monsters half so horrible and dread. Scrooge looked appalled. Having them been shown to him in this way, he tried to say they were fine children, but the words choked themselves rather than be parties to a lie of such enormous magnitude. "Spirit," Scrooge says, "are they yours?" The Spirit says, "they are man's. And they cling to me, appealing. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both and all of their degree, but most of all, beware this boy. For on his brow I see written, which is doom, unless the writing be erased." And Scrooge says, "But have they no refuge, no resource?" And the Spirit turns to him and says, "Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?" I mean, this is, I mean, I don't know, do I need to say anything? I mean, it's quite wonderful. Yeah. And really, you know, prophesizes, you know, very much, you know, in our own society, where so many young people are brought up in poverty and deprivation of all types, become this face, don't they? By the time they're young, by the time they're teenagers, they have been made ugly, haven't they? And what do we offer them? What Scrooge offered them? Prisons, workhouses. Things have not changed much. So, that's... even though his journey in Christmas Present was quite beautiful, it ends on this note. And we can see Dickens' heart. You know, Dickens also grew up very poor, had a very difficult early life, and obviously never lost his empathy for those in those situations. And now the last of spirits of his visiting. And this was a phantom. You know, the other ones were quite dramatic. this is a phantom that moved. As it moved, it seemed to scatter gloom. Deep black garment concealed its head, its face, its form. It was hard to detach the figure from the night. Its mysterious presence filled him with a solemn dread. He knew no more, for the spirit neither spoke nor moved. He said, "Are you the presence of the Christmas, this ghost of Christmas is yet to come?" The spirit didn't say anything, just raised his hand to point. "You are about to show me the shadows of the things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that not so?" There's like a very little nod. The phantom. Although well used to ghostly company by this time, Scrooge feared the silent shape so much that his legs trembled beneath him. He found he could hardly stand to follow it. There was a vague horror in Scrooge, because he knew that behind the dusky shroud there were ghostly eyes intently fixed upon him, while he, though he stretched his own to the utmost, could see nothing but the spectral hand. "Ghost of the future," said Scrooge, "I fear you more than any specter I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?" No reply. "Lead on," said Scrooge, "lead on. The night is waning fast, and it is a precious time to me. I know." So we can see. Already, Scrooge, from his journey with the spirits of Christmas past, life past, and by the spirit of the present, he's already been transformed. He's had insights. He says, "I'm going to be a better man." He knows that now looking into life in this way is going to do me good. "I hope to live to be another man from what I am." And he also now knows that time is precious, he says. That's interesting. Time is precious. But yet, I think it's very interesting because you could almost stop here, right? But he introduces this future. Because my own sense is, it's like many of us. We introspect. We have insights. We have understandings. And we intend to do different, don't we? We see through a lot of our stuff. And we vow to do different. Right? But often we don't. We just live in the world of intention, don't we? That is the truth. And so I think, here I'm speaking for Dickens, that's why he didn't just leave it, right? Because what he's now going to show us is, even with all the insights and good intentions, even with our bookshelf full of spiritual books, our future will only be created by our actions. Actions of our mind, because the thoughts and feelings and perceptions of our mind create our mind. The actions of our words and the actions of our body, our deeds. And it is only when this changes that our life will change. And so Scrooge, let's say he's in his 60s or 70s, he's got a long history here that has now been shown to him. Right? And now we're going to see what's going to happen if he doesn't change. And then again, I won't go into it all, but he takes him on a journey. There's a gathering of people. Somebody has died. And they're talking about the dead person. Not too complimentary. He doesn't quite figure out who they're talking about and who has died. Then he goes into a really dark part of town with this rag dealer, and these three people have come with these kind of used goods to sell. Somebody has died. And these are the people who have kind of access to this person's home. They're like the cleaners or whatever. And because this person who died lived alone and had nobody when he died, they were able to steal everything. And so they bring, the bed linens, the sheets, the pillows, the drapes from the walls, of various kinds of items, not too many that were around the house worth anything. They bring them to this junk dealer, this pawnbroker, to sell. And while they're doing it, they are really talking about this miserable human being who died and why they felt totally justified in taking everything. He visits a home of somebody who had just come back, some man who had just come back I guess they were quite impoverished, going through very difficult times, and the husband had gone to the person who held, a note that they had borrowed money on, begging him to forgive it for a time since they were in such difficult straits. And he came back to bring her good news. He had died. So they did. They did have some temporary respite from their note. So there was some joy. And he goes to the Cratchit house, and he sees a sadness in the house. Tiny Tim has died. And then they end up in a graveyard, and the phantom points to it. And Scrooge says, "Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point, answer me one question." This is a very important line. He says, "Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they the shadows of the things that may be?" This is very important. Many of us think, kind of like, I am who I am. You know, this is the way I am, and this is the way I'll probably always be. I can probably make a few modifications, but basically this is who I am, right? Life has created me this way. This is my personality. This is the mind I have. This is, right? And so is it that way, really? Is there really that kind of strong fate or conditioning? Or is this only all just maybe? And that if things change, things may be very different. So he says, answer me this one question. Are these the shadows that you've shown me, the things that will be or may be? The ghost just pointed to the grave. Scrooge said, men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which, if persevered, they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me. Right? And this is, Dharma, Karma 101. Right? He's really saying, yes. Right. When causes and conditions change, he's begging, tell me. If causes and conditions change, then the results change, right? He wants to be assured of that. It's not fixed, it's not immovable. But the spirit was immovable as ever. So Scrooge creeps toward the stone, and he sees, of course, Ebenezer Scrooge on the stone. And then, of course, Scrooge cries, saying, "And I was that man who lay upon the bed," because he saw the body. And the finger again pointed from the grave to Scrooge. "No, Spirit, no," he cries, but the finger was still there. "Spirit," he cried, tightly clutching its robe, "hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for this night. Why show me this grave if I am past all hope?" For the first time, the hand of the phantom began to shake a little bit. "Good Spirit," he said, he fell prostrate before him. "Your nature intercedes for me, pities me. Assure me that I may yet change these shadows that you have shown me by an altered life." The phantom hand trembled even more. He says, "I will honor Christmas in my," this is Scrooge, "I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all year." All year. "I will live in the past, the present, the future," which means I'll understand it all. "I will not shut out the lessons that I have been taught. Oh, tell me that I may sponge away the writings on this stone." In his agony, he caught the phantom's hand. It sought to free itself, but Scrooge was strong in his entreaty, and he held it. The spirit, stronger yet, repulsed him. Holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reverse, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. And Scrooge wakes up. He was in his own bed, in his own room. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. He scrambles out of bed. "I will live in the past, present, the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this. I say this on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees." He was so fluttered and so glowing with his good intentions that his broken voice could scarcely answer to his call. He had been sobbing violently in his conflict with the spirit, the phantom, and his face was wet with tears. He says, "I am here. The shadow of the things that would have been may be dispelled. They will be. I know they will." He's all over the place. And then he says, "I don't know what to do now," he cried, laughing, crying the same breath, making a perfect fool of himself in his stockings. "I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to the whole world." He's just frisking around his sitting room. And he laughs. A splendid laugh. A most illustrious laugh. The father of a long, long line of brilliant laughs. So this is quite wonderful, right? Again, in our own parlance of Zen or whatever, we might say Scrooge has awakened, hasn't he? He's awakened from his suffering, but he's awakened from his false dream of who he thought he was and what life was about. Right? he is finally seeing clearly himself, and he is finally seeing clearly the potential he has. And that deep looking has enlightened him. And in one night, he has freed himself, hasn't he? And it's funny because in the literature of Zen, there is a literature of enlightenment and enlightenment experiences. And people who have enlightenment experience the same kind of freedom. Right? This unburdening of all that weighed them down. Because Scrooge has realized in the moment what? That all that weighed him down was nothing other than what? Himself. And when you say himself, you mean his thoughts, his feelings, his identities, I mean the whole thing. That's all that ever weighed him down. And he has been restored, right? To that primal purity where he sees life as an open tableau, right? That he has the capacity now of writing just the way he wants. And that fills him with great happiness. And so, you know, he just kind of goes crazy. You know, he's just wishing happiness to everybody and buys turkeys for Bob Cratchit. He's out in the street. He runs into those two people that, remember, he wouldn't give any money to. And they kind of shy away from him when they see him coming. He goes up to them, he embraces them, and he whispers in their ear what he wants to give. And he says to them, after he offers them, obviously, a very significant gift, he said, please, when they try to thank him, he says, oh, don't say anything. Just come see me. Will you come see me? I will cry, the old gentleman. And it was clear he meant to. And then Scrooge says, thank you. I am much obliged to you. I thank you 50 times. Bless you. Right? See, we think it's the other way. We think people that we are generous to should thank us. Right? And Scrooge says, thank you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. Right? It's so wonderful. Right? It's real generosity. It's generosity that is grateful to have the opportunity to be generous, to have the opportunity to be open-hearted, and you know, all these things. We are grateful to the recipient rather than most people, you know, how come you're not grateful to me? How come no one's noticing how generous I am? How come my name isn't up in lights? He went to church. He walked about the streets. He watched the people going to and fro. He patted children on the head, questioned beggars, looked down into the kitchens of houses and up into their windows, and found that everything could yield him pleasure. He had never dreamed that any walk, that anything, could give him so much happiness. There it is, right? What's giving him such happiness? He's finally come out of his fog of self-interest, his narcissistic fog that's all about him. He's finally come out of his obsessive involvement in accumulation more and more for himself, and he's what? He's present. He's present. He's walking in the street, an ordinary street that he's walked on thousands of times, and this time what? Everything is making him happy. He's happy to see human beings, right? He greets them in love and happiness, right? Everything gives him pleasure, the smallest things. He's not on drugs, right? He hasn't just come from Christmas party and he's quite loaded with punch. That's the way many people, the way that people get into that good feeling, the open-heartedness. He's done it because he's awake. He He's present, and he's open-hearted. And of course, he goes to see his nephew, freaks him out, and it's all good. And then, I'll just read the last paragraph because it's noon. And so, and of course, he Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became a good as friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world knew. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh and little heeded them. For he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good, at which some people did not have their fill of laughter in the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. So quite wonderful, right? And quite true, right? Many of us may know that when our life takes another direction, when our life, when we move away from the Scroogeness of so much of our culture, that many people might say, what happened to him? What happened to her? She's changed. She's changed. What's going on? And people are like that. And that's what he's saying here. But he's saying Scrooge couldn't care less. He understood that. And the wonderful thing at the end, he said, and if that, he said, and if he now brought a smile to their face because he was so different, that made him happy too, right? He was fine with that. At least they were happy. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. So that's the story of Scrooge, a wonderful, I think a wonderful teaching for all of us. I mean, I find it every year very inspiring to read and reread it and touch, because we all get busy, don't we? Even those of us in the world of Dharma and creating mindfulness institutions and all that, we get busy. So it's good to be reminded. And again, Scrooge never entered a meditation center. He never read a spiritual book, right? It's important to know that. He went through a process of awakening. And again, I think we should all remember that our study and practice of meditation, our study and practice of mindfulness, our study and practice of these wonderful teachings that have been bequeathed us, they're all in the service of this. Right. So, thank you.